It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
You got that right. The band's back together.
Yes, sir.
After a little bit of absence from the Fishing Ninja. Remember that movie, The Matrix? There was a movie, The Matrix. I'm the guy that's seen like three movies, so that's one I have seen.
Yeah.
And the character Keanu Reeves played, Neo or something, like he can dodge. They'll shoot bullets at him, but he's like got special powers. Yeah, and then he can just dodge the bullets.
Right? Yeah. So,
that's a lot like my friend Mike Ward, and we have not talked about this beforehand, and I specifically have not talked about it with Mike before we started the show today, so I could get the interpretation and the story from the man that has gone viral out there with the most watched video coming out of the 89th Alabama D.C. Fishing Rodeo. The most watched video has to be of Mike Ward, and he's back in studio, and the crowd goes wild. Here he is, Mike. Mike.
It was amazing, wasn't it? It was really amazing that we had the camera going.
Let's talk about this first of all.
That's one of those things that...
Oh, we're going to get that question answered here in a second, because everybody's asked that question. I said, I'll wait till you were in.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about, if you haven't for some reason, if you're one of the seven people left in Mobile and Baldwin County that have not seen the video of my friend and the King Mackerel, you need to go to... You can go to probably anywhere on Facebook, but you can go to our FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors Facebook page, or just the FM Talk 106.5 Facebook
page, or go to
Mike Ward's page, and check this video out so you can see what we're talking about, as you're going to set the stage for this. So this is the rest of the story. This is why this is being shared all around and people don't know the whole story. We have the man that's in the video sitting right here. So, Mike, what happened?
Well, I mean, it was really kind of crazy. We just put the camera up. You know, it was kind of strange, and I think it's in the video where I said, did y'all turn the camera on?
Is it like just a stationary mount?
Yeah, it's just like a GoPro? My son, Michael, brought a GoPro with a handle on it, and he just strapped it to the T-top.
Okay.
And I had...
Nobody's running the camera. It's just
sitting on a T-top. Right. Yeah. Okay. And somebody said something about the camera. I said, well, did y'all turn the camera on? And they said, yeah, I just turned it on. And, you know, about that time... I was helping Michael with a King Mackerel. He had a King on, and I was up there waiting to try to gaff him. And all of a sudden, I went from one side of the boat, started back to the other side of the boat, and I turned my head. And just as I turned my head, I seen something. I didn't know what it was. It was coming at me 100 miles an hour, and I just ducked. You know, I had no idea what was coming
at me. Your reflexes are still kicking, Mike. They're good.
I just saw something, and I didn't know. So anyway, I ducked, and he hit me in the back of the head and also hit me in the back.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice the back.
Yeah.
I saw you grabbed yourself there, you know, when you walked up towards the bow.
Well, that's a different story. People thought, well, I was having a heart attack or something.
I knew better.
Yeah, no. What happened? Well, let me start the story over again, okay?
Michael, take two.
Yeah, Michael's got a King Mackerel on the front of the boat.
Mike's son, Michael.
My son, Michael. And we always, once you get the boat turned around chasing the King Mackerel down, somebody gets a hardtail or a bait and throws it out the back so we can hopefully maybe get another one on at the same time.
Right.
So Maddox Bethay, my grandson's buddy, threw a bait out, and the bait, unknowing to him, I'm sure King Mackerel was probably chasing him, and he swam up beside the boat. And when the hardtail swam up beside the boat, the King Mackerel came up, skied on the hardtail.
Actually, he boated.
Yeah, and that's when the King came over the boat, hit me, and went over the other side.
So this is a story nobody knows how this happens. Okay,
yeah.
So he's pitched the other bait out. He's reeling it up for some reason just to get out of the water because getting close to gaffing the fish or...
No, he didn't realize. He threw the bait out the back.
Uh-huh.
He didn't realize that the bait was probably running from that King Mackerel and swam upside the boat to get away from the King Mackerel.
Okay, so he hadn't reeled it up to that point. It's just the hardtail came up to the boat for protection.
The hardtail came up close to the boat.
So there's a big loop in the line.
He didn't realize it.
Okay.
Okay, and then the King skies on it, and, you know. And
like y'all have seen out there, the Kings would come up from underneath and hit a bait and go way up in there.
That's right. Well, I freeze frame those pictures, you know, the video where you can see frame to frame to, mm-hmm. and when he comes out of water, he's got that hardtail cut in half, and the hook is in the hardtail's head, so the hook's hanging out of his mouth, and his whole mouth is bleeding, you know, from the blood out of the hardtail.
Hardtail, right.
So when he skies, there's blood all over the boat. All over the starboard side of the gunnel,
okay.
on the floor, and on the port side of the gunnel. I mean, when he hit me, there was blood on me, and there was blood on the side of the boat. But it was from the hardtail that he had just crunched.
So as y'all are watching this video, once again, you go to Mike's Facebook page or our radio station Facebook page, or about 50% of the Facebook pages out there have this video linked. As he's coming through, you said and you all see it. The King's making kind of an arc. He's skying like he would even if there wasn't a boat there.
That's right.
So he hits you in the head. I didn't know the back thing. So he hits you because it's fast in the video because I don't have to slow down.
Well, see, you got to freeze frame it. You know, once you freeze frame it, you can see what's going on with it.
Okay. So tell us. So you're looking, if I remember correctly, you're looking to the bow. You're looking off the bow at that point, right?
Yes.
And it hits you. So the head of the King hits your head and hits your back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you're showing me a freeze frame here where you're bent over. You saw the fish. We didn't know what it was, but you saw something coming.
Hit me in the head. Hit me in the back of the head as I was ducking down, and then he hit me in the back. And you can see the picture here.
Oh, yeah, he's nosing you right in the back.
Yeah, nosed me in the back.
The question is, when he does that, now I'm seeing the freeze frames, I believe you, I just saw the fat. How does he then keep enough energy to make it? Mike doesn't have a little boat. Yeah. How does he have the energy to make it the whole way across that dang boat?
He just does. but he hits the side.
How
boat.
Hard did he hit he, you?
He I mean, had, had it, it wasn't. It wasn't hard. Now had I,
if you not
had
ducked,
had I not ducked, I was I, looking.
He could have right, knocked you clean he, out.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at him square in the eyes when I saw him. So, I didn't know what it was, but my eye was right at his angle where he'd hit me right in the head.
You know,
There's no doubt about it.
Like.
It could have been really, really, really serious.
I saw you walk after that, and I saw you walk up to the bow and saw you kind of compose yourself. Because you and I had not talked. We talked before the rodeo got started,
right?
But we didn't talk. And I was like, oh no! And then I saw you walk up and say, okay, he's okay. But you have a video on your hands that may be one of the more in-demand videos going forward. I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen. I've seen billfish come up in the back of boats. I've seen Asian carp jumping, but I've never seen anything with a king mackerel jumping across a boat, hitting somebody, and going back in the Gulf on the other side.
I hadn't either.
Never to be caught again.
Yeah. Well, we had him on. Let me tell you the rest of the story. Okay. So when you see Maddox come running up towards the front of the boat, he has to take the rod and reel and go around the gap on the starboard side of the boat. And then he runs up to the bow of the boat because the King's going straight out the bow of the boat.
So he did get the hook at him.
Oh, he had the hook in him. Yeah, he followed him. I had him right up to the boat. I was in a foot. Within a foot, Maddox got him up to the boat, you know, 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, whatever. And I'm sitting there, and I got the gaff over the side of the boat, getting ready to gaff. I'm looking at him real good. There's a couple of us looking at him. He's a 45. He could be a 50-pound king.
He's one that
would win some money for me.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at him and saying, boy, we getting ready to win some money.
I'm about to touch you a second time.
Yeah. I'm getting ready to get you in the hook pull.
Oh, my gosh.
He had one hook in him. The other one was outside of him. I didn't realize it at the time. But
you're also lucky that that hook didn't hit you when it came across you and ripped through. Oh my gosh!
Yeah, I mean, that hook could have grabbed me in the face. Yep. I mean, it's just a lot of things that could have happened that didn't happen that we are very blessed not to have happened.
I mean, you have a once in a lifetime video there, Mike.
Yeah, it's a good video. I mean, I didn't really think that much about it. You know, if I hadn't had it on video, I'd just told people, man, a king skied across a boat, hit me in the head, and went out the other side.
Wait,
you know, and we'd all said, "Yeah, yeah, yeah," and you'd have never thought anything else much about it. You
watch
know?
This video; it's something. I mean, I don't like I said. I've seen videos of they're backing down on a marlin. It comes in the boat before they want it to come in the boat. I've seen Asian carp jumping. We've watched our whole life watch king sky, and I've just never seen them clear a boat while they're doing it.
Me either. I haven't seen that.
Y'all got to check that video out and tell us what you think. So outside of that, and we got a couple minutes here before we get to the break and we'll come back.
I wish I'd have had a video of another episode. Well, I'll tell you this, too. I had another 20 or 30 minutes before that fish hit, we had another fish on, same size. Might have been a little bit bigger. I had him on the reel and rod, got him up to the boat. Exact same thing happened. Michael, my son, got the gaff in his hand, getting ready to go down a foot out of the range of the gaff, and he pulls the hook on me. Another 45, 50, maybe
what
a little
bit.
What
was happening?
I don't know. Those things happen. It's just the way it is. But the other video that I wish we would have gotten, we were in crystal blue water, and we'd pulled up to this spot and threw a bait out, and a king skied on it immediately. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, probably not a big, maybe a 30, 35 pound or so, you know, nice king. And we fighting him, and, you know, we can see him. He's 40, 50 foot, you know, below the boat in the water.
Water's clear enough.
Yeah,
you can see
him. See him, you know. We fighting him and seeing him, and here comes a big old tiger shark. I don't know how big he was, 300, 400, 500, 600 pounds. I don't know. He was a monster. And ate half of him. Now, I would have loved to have had that video of that shark in that clear water cutting that king mackerel in half. I mean, just come up here and one little gulp and it was gone.
If he hit the other end, you could have had, you know, something for the shark way in. Because I think 684 was somewhere in there for that tiger shark, the number one. When you saw that choker come in, that was a big one. We're going to come back and get more recap on the rodeo from... Well, the viral video star, Mike Ward. Also, in the second half of this show, we'll shift gears like I do in July and get an idea of what should we expect as duck hunters this fall. Seth Maddox from the state of Alabama joins us as well. Y'all stay right there. It's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. It's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan and viral video sensation, my friend Mike Ward. And it's a once in a lifetime video.
Yeah, it is. You know, I don't know anything about. You know, I just stick pictures on Facebook now.
Right.
And but Mark Kennedy, my buddy, he stuck it on his page and that's where it really went viral. I didn't really do it. He's the one that put it on there. And however you do that, and I think last night it was like 49,000 people had looked at it. I mean,
wish you had a sponsored product placed in that shot? Had a shirt on with a logo. Instead of like where the same kind of shirt's always fishing and always, but if you'd had a logo on the back of that.
Yeah, that'd have been nice. I know there's people get millions of views on stuff and all, but that, you know,
you get what the hottest videos going on. I'm just proud to know you. Yeah. I'm just proud to know you at this point. So overall rodeo for you. Y'all went to I don't know if you go to Venice. You went
no,
to
we went to Fushan. We fished out of Fushan. It was really pretty slow. Pre-fishing.
You and I talked after your day of pre-fishing as I was getting ready for the first day of fishing that night before. And you said, y'all hadn't.
After you had the liars contest, yes.
And you and I were on the phone. You're down at the hotel. Did you catch one the first
day? We pre-fished. We never even got a bite.
Wow.
Sure didn't. And the next day, the Friday, we caught a fair amount of fish. Saturday, we caught one half of a fish. That was that fish I was telling you about. That was it for a whole day of Saturday. And then Sunday morning, before we came back, we got into the fish. You know,
isn't that weird?
It is.
So Friday, you catch them some.
Yeah.
Saturday's one fish, half a fish.
Yeah.
And then Sunday back on. Same area?
No, different areas.
Okay.
Different areas. But anyway, we got on some fish, and we had a couple that, you know, could have done some good. But that's just the way fishing is, you know.
So
you get upset about it for a minute or two, and then you just say, hey, that's just fishing. There's nothing we can do about it. It's gone. You know?
You fish around rigs?
Yeah, fished around rigs.
Okay.
Sure did. And some sunk oil rigs, too.
Okay.
Fish some of that.
And it just, when you got into them, though, like Friday and Sunday, were they all bigs or were they, what size?
They were 30 to, you know, these 45, 50 pounders.
Okay.
Yeah. And we had a couple more that got off, too. That you know,
was it like, when you say it was on the good days, was it like that where you can't hurt, you get a bait in the, I mean, you let the bait out and you almost put the reel, engage it, and you got a fish?
It
was
wasn't
it like
quite
that?
Like that, but it was close. You know, you make a half a loop around, you got one.
Okay.
You know, half a loop around a rig or
right
over a sunk rig or whatever, and you got one. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was pretty good Sunday. We just had to leave at 12:30, I think, to get back to Mobile.
Y'all didn't trailer?
No, we thought about trailering over there, and we just decided I wanted to pre-fish.
Right.
You know, I wanted to pre-fish that Thursday.
How long does that run from, like, down off, for you, from the mouth further east back to the mouth, like South Pass or Tiger, out of there? I mean, I know you're coming out of Fouchon, but I'm just saying for me.
You know, it was like 90 miles to Red Pass, which is at Venice, and then you got, you know, 15, 20 miles to go through there to get out Baptiste Clet, and then you got another 90 miles. So that's 180, you know, 200 miles.
Okay.
You know, so going 40 miles an hour.
It takes a while.
You know, so that's, and you got to give yourself a little bit of time, too. That's 4.5 hours. So we gave ourselves 5 hours left over at 12 o'clock. And I got back, I had 8 minutes to spare.
I was over there. I was cleaning fish on the dock when I heard the first cannon boom, and I was like, "I hope Mike's in line."
Yeah. last year I missed it. I missed the weigh-in last year. Yeah. I had a fuel
issue.
That's right.
I remember that.
Yeah, my fuel valves were messed up somehow, and we got an airlock in our fuel, and we couldn't get our engines cranked, and you know we missed the weigh-in by a couple of minutes. You know, so anyway. It almost happened to us this time. We got three fuel tanks, and two of them ran out. We thought it actually wasn't two of them. It was one of them ran out. And anyway, we had to sit there and think about things. Dylan was supposed to change the valves, and he only changed one and put two engines on the center tank.
Gotcha.
So we ran out in the center tank. Then we had to run the center motor off of the starboard and the starboard off the starboard. So we had to figure that out for a couple of minutes.
But anyway, you still made it in.
We made it in. So it was all good.
And you weighed in kings, anything else?
Kings, yeah. We caught some snapper, but none of them big enough.
Okay. Couple of things. Yeah, I'm not going to go through the whole list.
So what'd you do? I haven't had a chance to ask you anything. I haven't talked to you.
I struggled beyond struggling to catch a speckled trout.
Yeah.
I mean, and I feel a little bit better. I wasn't the only one. I fished around the island, but I fished beach. You know how I am. I started off fishing beach. Went through – I'll tell you how toothy the bite was. I went through – I think I counted up like 14 or 15 kale hooks.
Yeah.
That's how many I went through. That's how many cut off. So tons of Spanish and bluefish and some ladyfish. Couldn't put it together for speckled trout on the beach. Fished the rigs. Really wouldn't happen on the rigs, you know, and some rigs I know how to fish.
Sure.
Went down to the west, Mississippi Sound, fish wrecks down there. Not much better. Went up into the marsh. It got desperate enough. I went up in the marsh, and we could catch a couple speckled trout mixed in with the white trout. So, I went to fishing 3 feet of water with rattle corks.
Yeah.
And voodoo shrimp just to catch some trout. So we tried everything from shallow water, deep water, marsh to beach to rigs to wrecks to reefs. It's just tough. It's tough. I caught some decent flounder. Not anything like winning. That first day, that 6-something pounder came in. I said, "Well, there's your winner on flounder."
But the good news is the flounder are coming back. People are catching flounder. Yep. So that's the good news.
Yeah, I did that for sure. Other than that, not much to report. A lot of gas burned. A lot of croakers dunked in the water. No winning speckled trout to report on that. I want to say this though. And I'm only going to read a couple things here in the results because you can go to adsfr.com and see everything you want there. The three top blackfish that came in.
Yeah.
Okay, 33.31, 31.59, and 31.33. They weighed in right in front of me.
Yeah. Well,
they were like I was standing in line with them. And they come off this boat, and I see they've got the fish bags.
Yeah.
And you couldn't really see in it, but they got a wheelbarrow. They weren't the long fish bags like you put a king in or something like that. I'm like, what is going on here? These guys wheel up right in front of me, kind of arrive at the same time to go weigh in. And they go in front of me, and I see either a head or a tail. I forget which one of a blackfish sticking out. And I said, oh, my gosh, look at that. Look at the size of that. Then they proceeded to lay them on the deck to weigh them.
Yeah.
And so for you to know, because I can tell you firsthand, all three of those fish came off the same boat.
Yep.
And I've seen some what I thought were big blackfish in my life before. I've never seen anything like this. And three
that's
of them
monsters.
Over. 33.31, 31.59, and 31.33. So Patrick Hill, Lance Hill, and Landon Hinote.
Yeah.
On that boat. I was amazed. So if y'all are listening, I was a guy in line by y'all with my jaw on the floor.
Lance Hill is a real good friend of mine. His son is Patrick Hill. Quick story. First time Lance ever fished in the Gulf of Mexico, he lived in Birmingham, came down here and fished with me with a buddy of mine that was the Daiwa rep and got ice chest rip and a Bagley bait rip. Anyway, they came down and went fishing with me, and Lance fell in love with it, and ended up, he's a veterinarian, had a, and he came down here, built, put a practice, put his practice over in Baldwin County, bought a house on at Orange Beach, and he's lived there ever since.
Wow.
Out of going fishing with me one time in the Gulf. He said, I love this.
Well, I don't know what all else they were out for, yeah, but they figured out that I've never seen.
No, that's good.
I've never seen blackfish off one boat like that.
That's monsters. Absolutely monsters.
Incredible. I just sat
and
there.
And it is strange off of one boat.
Yeah. So if you can get the – I do want to hear that story. If he can join us on the show, because we're all wondering in the blackfish world.
He's not going to tell us nothing, did he come, John.
Well, all we're asking is two questions. Two questions.
Yeah.
What state were you off of?
Yeah.
And was it offshore or inshore? Those are only two questions I need answered.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to find a spot. I'm just offshore or inshore.
I don't know the state, but I almost tell you it's inshore, I would think.
Those things are incredible. Speaking of, I
agree with you.
Speaking of big fish, we'll talk sharks here in a second. Also, just a side note, if you listened to the show the other day on Saturday when I was talking to Dr. Sean Powers, people were weighing in permit, thinking they were pompano.
Yeah.
In this tournament, and he said the number of permit has come way up and keeps building every year. That's pretty cool because those jokers can get big.
Yeah, they can.
If we get a permit fishery around here,
you know, quite a few African pompanos too.
Yeah, those African pompanos come in. But those are more offshore.
Yeah, they are. But I'm just saying,
but those permit could be in the bay.
Yeah,
I mean those things are. I mean that's down in South Florida when they're not catching bonefish, they're catching.
That's right.
Yeah, so there are. He said quite a few people came in and said, "Hey, I got a big pompano." He said, "No, you got a permit."
Yeah,
but the other thing, of course, the thing we got to talk about is the sharks. Of course, that is back for the rodeo, and the way I see it, people liked it because I was there to watch the spectators come down to see it. Spectators loved it. A lot more people went to look at the sharks, and then the people went after it. The top five are all tiger sharks.
Top nine.
I think it's top nine or tiger. Yeah, top nine or tiger sharks.
Yeah,
that's it.
And
that bull shark at number 10.
Number 10. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so some big ones winning it. 674.2 pounds for James Russell. Ethan Miller, second place, 658.4 pounds. Think about that. And I saw that fish come in too. When you roll in with a 658.4 pound tiger shark, you think you probably got this locked up.
Yep.
Until that 674 comes in. Brett Rutledge, you and I both know Brett, coming in at number three with a 630.8-pound tiger shark. He probably thought he had a winning tiger shark, too. So did probably Hayden Pugh with 595.2 pounds. Fifth place, Stephen Garrard with 545.8 pounds. And then go down the list, it's tiger shark still, like Mike said, number 10, the bull shark, a big bull shark, too, at 434.2 pounds. And sharks, obviously popular with the anglers in this tournament. And like I said, I was the man on shore. I was there. I was on the rodeo site every day. The people came to see the sharks.
I think that's the best thing they've done in a long time. Do you know how many people participated in a rodeo? Do you know the number?
That number had moved around, I'm going to say, because we asked at one point, it was like 3,800 tickets, I think, sold. And then they said 4,200. And I don't know if they had a recount or that counted maybe jackpot tickets or something like that. It was not the biggest turnout ever for it. But the number of people that came to the island, they said, was 75,000.
That's big time.
Big time. And they came to see sharks.
Sharks, yes.
Came to see sharks. Coming right back, we'll switch gears. Talk about some ducks. Seth Maddox from the state of Alabama joins us next. Right, welcome back. It is FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I'm Sean Sullivan, my friend and viral video star, Mike Ward, still in studio with me. The man that was knocked in the head in the back by King Mackerel and is here to tell the tale.
Could have been knocked completely out.
Good thing you have, I said on the air the other day, you had cat-like reflexes. Yeah. You're like a ninja ducking that King Mackerel. We're lucky to have you here, and we're lucky to get to watch a video of it as well. Y'all can check that out. We talked about it. It's on our Facebook page. You can check that out as well. All right, and it is this time of year. Well, I got to tell you, Mike will probably second that I think about ducks pretty much year-round.
Yes.
I worry about
not a day goes by that you're not
worried about a duck.
Thinking about a duck.
I'm worried about a duck. Yeah. And listen, that's why I have our friend Seth Maddox, who is the Migratory Bird Coordinator for the state of Alabama, on the air with us, because I bet you he thinks about them daily, too. How about it, Seth?
Oh, yeah, every day.
See, Mike, I'm not by myself.
No, I knew you wasn't by yourself. I knew Seth would be right in there with you.
Because people wonder, like, okay, it is July, Sean. Why are you worrying about ducks? Because I want to find out what we can expect in the flight this year. That's why we get Seth on to talk about it. Seth, where are we in the prairie pothole regions and the other nesting regions? Because last year was pretty bad news. It was dry.
Yeah, it was a drought conditions last year, you know, but it's been a couple of years. I think 2019 was the last waterfowl breeding population and habitat survey in Canada and the northern U.S. Due to COVID restrictions. So this is the first year in 2 years they've been able to fly that survey. They had 9 crews go back up this year, which is normal staffing for that, and they're covering over 2 million square miles of area in that breeding ground. So, habitat conditions did a flip-flop, pretty much a 180. You know, everything's back to being wet this year. Some areas, completely flooded out in certain areas where they got a lot of snowfall and all that melt was coming down. But the conditions look a lot better this year. And so, with that, ducks are pretty resilient when that habitat's available. They take advantage of it. They make hay when the sun's shining, as the old saying goes. And, that population can jump back up pretty quick.
I guess people don't follow this stuff may not think about it. They just think about, okay, it's the fall, the ducks are here. But, yeah, those obsessed people like us are looking at them in the summertime. And it does. It makes a really big difference.
Yeah. What we saw last year, with poor conditions on the breeding grounds is, we didn't have as big of a fall flight. So what we rely on a lot are those juveniles in the population that are hatchier birds. And we were lacking some of that last year. So it made a tough season. But, that should turn around this year with good habitat up on the prairies.
Now, do you think some species are going to rebound more quickly than others? Are you looking at any of that? I mean, does it favor blue wings or favor mallards or gray ducks, or is it just kind of even?
Yeah, I mean, all those prairie breeding ducks, so mallards for sure, blue wings for sure, some gabwalls, pintails, hopefully, although they're hurting pretty bad. The other species, are kind of in between. They may jump over and go to the border, which wasn't as suffering as bad last year, but it's not quite as productive. That the duck production area is those prairie pothole regions there in the central part of Canada and north central U.S., the Dakotas, Montana. That region's really the heartbeat of duck production, and the things can change up there really quickly. It's really dynamic. It's been wet up there for several years, but it needed to dry out. That's a good thing, every once in a while to dry out, reset, have vegetation grow back, and provide better resources and make like running a fire through an area. It creates new growth and provides much better nutrients to those ducks.
Yeah, and now the second part of this equation. So the population is looking like on rebound. Of course, the second part of this is getting those ducks down here. And that's been a bigger conversation that you and I've had over the years on this show. Anything from looking backwards into last year for what happened here in Alabama, comparing it to years in the past? I mean, mine's just anecdotal. That's all it is. But gosh, it was a tough year last year on the south end down here.
Yeah, it might have been. I mean, we've been talking about bad years for the last couple of years, and it might have been the worst one yet last year. We had really dry conditions early from October through December, and then in January we got a ton of rain, so it flooded out a lot of places. And when birds were here, were real spread out, and we just really never got cold, very cold, so the ducks never really pushed down. So whether we see, we benefit from this increased production on the prairies is yet to be determined. But I can say we're due for a good winter.
Yeah, well, I like that spirit. If you weren't positive, if
you weren't an optimist, you wouldn't be a duck hunter. you'd be out of the mix. But yeah, so I mean, it is a two-part thing. We can get excited by the Maypond counts and the numbers, but if we don't get the weather to get them here, you know, it's just academic at that point. What about? I mean, I'm talking about the south end down here. Of course, y'all are paying attention to the whole state. Was it any better up on the Tennessee River, North Alabama?
Not really. It was pretty poor statewide. Even, I mean, some states above us, they suffered a little bit, Tennessee into Kentucky. I mean, ducks were kind of hung up there right in the heart of the country, you know, in that mid-latitude region, Missouri, Illinois, in those areas. So they you know, they have end up having good seasons, but, you know, that we suffer when we don't get good cold weather to push those birds down.
Now, let's talk about some of the new seasons, relatively new here, too. You know, like sandhill crane season. Do they get, I don't have the lifetime of experience with them like other ducks. Do they migrate with the fronts, too, or are they based on the calendar? I mean, what are you seeing with that?
Yeah, pretty similar to weather patterns. Last year was our worst year, the first three seasons. We harvested 234 out of a pot of 1,200. You know, the prior season we harvested 391. It was the same kind of conditions that dropped early. Warmer conditions didn't push the birds down. What birds were here when we got all that rain kind of pushed them off those roosting grounds. They like to roost on these mud flats with shallow water around, and that water bump there in January really pushed them off those mud flats and spread them out to smaller areas. So that's kind of where we were last year with cranes, and so it kind of hurt us as far as hunting conditions went last year. But we got one more year of experimental seasons this upcoming season. After that, we're looking to next year in the 23 season, we're going to be able to add some additional opportunities and have more permits available to hunters.
Yeah, and if y'all haven't paid attention before, this is a lottery application thing. So when's that online?
September.
Okay. So remember that, y'all. We'll talk about it. We'll remind everybody in September, too. I'm being fair here because I don't want to remind y'all. I want less competition. But
Seth, you know, I've got several good buddies that hunt in the Mississippi Delta. And in the last 2 years, they pay big money to go over there and hunt over there. And they're really upset. They go over there and don't even get to shoot the gun. I know several times my buddy's gone over there and not even pull the trigger. I mean, that's very unusual when he said they used to have just tons of ducks come in. Is there so much food out in the Northwest now and in Arkansas and all up there that even when it freezes, they might go to the river and then go back out in the fields and feed now instead of coming down here?
That's a little bit to play into it, but that's not everything. The majority of the problem is just the weather, like good cold weather. We need a prolonged cold front with ice forming on the water, snow forming on the ground, accumulation. And it's been a struggle in the southeastern states for the past couple of years. I mean, Louisiana's had some of their worst waterfowl surveys in the last 50 or 60 years, just in this last couple of years. And Mississippi's, you know, and Alabama are in the same boat. You know, if we don't get ice accumulation, snow accumulation on the ground to push those birds down, they're big, hardy ducks. They can survive a few days of cold weather if it thaws back out. But if it's, you know, a week or more of cold weather, that's what we really need to push them further south. So prolonged cold weather with, you know, snow accumulation really has to be in effect in that Missouri, northern Arkansas, Illinois region to push those birds down into the deep south.
What on the other front that, you know, a duck that's going to be migratory, but also some home bodies, wood duck numbers. How are y'all doing any research into that? Looking at it, what are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean they're doing fairly well. We're out banding those guys right now, capturing them across the state, throwing bans on them. You know, that's really the only way we have to survey them. So we do some mark recapture stuff with that data. And can look at population and trends in the population on that. So, Yeah, we can't count those from the air because, you know, wood ducks are pretty solitary and confined to these swamp areas where there's a lot of canopy cover and stuff like that. So they're really hard to count from the air, unlike other ducks that will be found in open water habitats. So that's why we're out banding those guys and collecting that data so we can monitor the population. But population overall is doing pretty well.
And before we run to the news break, and we'll come back more with migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox, and we'll talk some doves here at the end of the show. Any big changes, anything for waterfowl seasons, for teal season and big duck season, anything you know of?
No, all pretty standard stuff this year with the lack of data. You know, we're now setting those seasons a year in advance, so we had a little bit of a lack of data last year, so we felt comfortable just, you know, kind of just moving the ball forward. Waiting until we get this new data from the survey that just took place.
All right. Coming right back, more with Seth Maddox right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. Also, our friend, migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox, which means I talked to him about ducks, I talked to him about cranes. I will talk to him at some point this year about woodcock, because he does, I'm interested in that as well. But next thing on the menu for hunting, outside of fishing slash hunting for alligators in the state of Alabama, would be dove hunting. And Seth, that's another thing. We talked about duck hunting, and Mike talked about how people had trouble killing ducks. I've been telling you that it's hit and miss with doves anymore. I don't know what's going on. I'm just not in the right place or not wearing the right hat or something.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every year about the opening, you know, the opening week or two, we'll get some type of front or hurricane or, you know, something hitting, and it kind of throws the birds off a little bit. But last year we got a little cold front, I think, up front there, that which it felt good, but you know, it tends to throw the birds for a little loop there. But yeah, I mean, dove population is doing well. You know, we're still top five dove state in the nation, harvesting 1.5 million birds a year. Most of those being in the first, you know, 2 weekends of the season, so that's a lot of birds to be harvested.
Are those local? Or Seth, that, I mean, I know nothing's the exact science, but in those first 2 weeks of the year, are those birds were growing up here in Alabama?
Yeah, most of those are going to be are local birds that raised here in Alabama. You know, doves can will start nesting in February or March. They'll lay 2 eggs per nesting attempt. They're successful in raising those up. You know, they can nest 7 or 8 times during the season. It takes about 30 days from the laying of the eggs to hatching them out to you know, the young being flighted. So we can really put a big population boost there with doves reproducing like that. So, you know, in Alabama we kill about 2 juveniles to every adult that we harvest. So people don't recognize that most of the bag limit's probably juveniles. You know, young of the year.
Just because there's so many more of them, or are the right. adults, or
yeah,
the adults
really
actually cagier?
They're not aware of their surroundings and landscape yet. You know, they're just learning. So the ones that survive are pretty smart, and they're good at reproduction. But you know, does in general don't survive very long, maybe 3 years in the wild. So, they're fast reproducing. They reproduce pretty well. But we do get migratory birds down here later in the season. The ones from North Alabama push down, and then we get birds, you know, all the way from up in Canada. And I've had one of our birds that we banned here in Alabama killed in Canada. So ours kind of spread out a little bit too, you know, going back north in the spring. So
that's a heck of a flight on little dove wings.
It is, yeah. And I didn't realize that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty
that they travel that far.
They are the map on dove ban recoveries. Most of them get recovered here in Alabama. They spread out a little bit east and west, but we kill a lot of birds from other states too.
Okay. So you're talking about them reproducing that many times. Is there – somebody be doing this. I'm going to ask a stupid question, but is there anything we can do to make our property, if somebody has is fortunate enough to have private property, to make it a better place to to hatch out doves and maybe have more doves in the area, or does it not matter? They're going to move. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not, it's not a wood duck box, but what kind of trees, what kind of cover, what do they need?
Yeah, I mean, the essential stuff, you know, food, water, cover. You know, they really like to open habitat. They don't have strong legs. Like you think about other birds, like turkeys, you know, they like to scratch on the ground and can get seeds and grubs and stuff like that. The doves really can't do that. They need some open ground. So, you know, if you plant your dove plot in the summer, you know, you prepare it in the fall by, you know, sowing winter wheat. If you go out there in the springtime and maybe bush hog some strips in that and open that seed up for a little more production for them, you know, some food sources, you know, they need some bare ground to be able to feed. And then, you know, they'll nest in like hedgerows and stuff. So they build a really terrible nest. a few sticks sitting on a level branch, and they do really well in cedar trees as well. So that provides some cover. But, you know, like hedgerows like that, you don't see that a lot anymore. That probably cut down on some reproduction potential. But, you know,
so thicker trees like that, thicker trees like cedars.
Along an open area, and then, you know, any type of water they can get to is really helpful.
Any loyalty to that? I don't know if these studies have been done. I ask crazy questions. Any loyalty to those areas? Let's say you did hatch out, you know, had doves in there, have a nest and hatching out. If you have the field there, you have that. Do they show any loyalty, or they could go wherever afterwards? I mean, is it?
Yeah, you see some loyalty for sure, especially if they're meeting all their needs. They don't want to go as far as they have to, really. So if you do provide all that that resources right there, the majority of them should hang around. Some of them are going to leave.
Well, Sean, you had 12 doves on your property last year, so if they half of them male, half of them a female, you should have 48 doves out there this year.
It's just running joke, but it's true. So I have, and I prep, you know, I've got millet field one side, then I'll take another field and do, you know, prepare the dirt,
do everything
and topsow wheat and all that, and I just keep waiting for the rest of them to show up. And I'm in an area of the state where there's ag fields around me. There's gravel roads around me. I don't know. I've had places in the past I've had a lot of doves. I am cursed. So if you can come down, do some kind of voodoo dance or something, let me know, Seth. Help me out.
We'll do that.
It's great. And reminder here, too, that what is, you know, most people think doves. Of course, you're talking about mourning doves. But talk about that, how the limit is for mourning doves, and then talk about white wings as part of that limit, and then talk about the like collards and things that aren't.
So we have five species of doves in Alabama, three native species. So you have your mourning dove, your ground dove, and your white-winged dove. Ground doves, you can't hunt. They're not legal to hunt. At least mourning doves and white-winged doves. White wings are found basically in the southwestern part of the state, and they're expanding their range, though. So those two count towards your bag limit of 15 per day. And then the other two species are invasive. We have the Eurasian collared dove and then the rock dove, which is your normal pigeon you see in the cities under the overpasses. Those two you can shoot without any repercussion towards your bag limit. So the ultimate hunt is to kill all four species, the quadrifecta on one hunt. That would be the ultimate goal.
Have you ever done that?
I have not. I've done three out of the four, but not all four yet.
So you were lacking what? Pigeon? What were you lacking?
Yeah, pigeon's hard to come by in some of these rural areas.
Because and that's a conversation for another day. Because, like in the Northeast, I have family up there, and around their barns, it's crazy with the number of pigeons. But our barns down here, and it's probably because I don't keep the amount of, you know, seed in there. But like we don't have many. You know, it's. And they, I don't know. I mean, we've eaten them before. I liked them. They were a big piece of meat.
It's a big dove, man.
Yeah, it's
Moffitt Road, 965. Well, you can kill all you want.
Let's see if you can get some selected, some nuisance permits to hunt them there.
Yeah.
Hey, Seth.
Plenty of them.
As always, I appreciate our conversations, and we're going to keep this going as we get towards dove season, of course, proper, and then, of course, teal season right after that. So I appreciate you updating us, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate being here, and
I
look forward to next time.
All right. Thank you, Seth. Migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox, and we're gone. We'll see y'all next week.